Blog Talk Radio.
M-A-D-D-A-D-S. Men against destruction, cause you know that we are best. Fathers of the ghetto ain't expressing nothing less. From the north to the south, to the east, to the west. Man, that's how you feel. On the streets, we keep it real. Day and night, the struggle fight is serious. I'm so for real. Tell me what was I to do. All I seen was knock it blue.
Welcome, everybody, to Blog Talk Radio. How you doing? My name is VJ Smith. I am your host, co-host right here with Tananye. How you doing, ma'am?
Hi, I'm doing great.
Great, great. We're glad to have you on the show. We're going to be talking about drug and alcohol treatment and why it is so important. Big ups to everybody in Florida, Iowa, Buffalo, New York, Pittsburgh, Lincoln and Omaha, Nebraska, and in Texas, and, of course, the headquarters right here in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So glad that you could be here. We are right now currently, one of our guests, which is going to be the well-known Reverend Lockett, Minister Lockett, is also the CEO, and he is the CEO of Micah House. And I believe that we have him on the line. Unless we've got Carol on the line. Now, I could be wrong. But I believe that we have Micah House on the line. How you doing, sir, Pastor? How you doing? And welcome to Blog Talk Radio.
I'm doing wonderful, Brother VJ, and I appreciate you for having me on your show.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce to you a good friend of mine. This gentleman is pretty amazing. So I'd like for you, if you could take us through a little bit of a journey and tell us a little bit about how you started in this drug and alcohol treatment arena.
Well, Brother VJ, it's going on 16 years now, praise God, and my journey wasn't a conventional path, but it was a path that I believe that God had me to take in order to qualify me with the anointing and favor that I'm able to have and do what I do. Graduated from college with a degree in business to going to the streets and selling drugs, and I have a spirit of excellence where I did quite well no matter what I do. And so I was very successful at it, but there was always something on the inside of me. You know, maybe it was those grandmothers and those great-grandmothers, so I thank God for them, because they instilled something in me that was always screaming to get out. And that was I knew what I was doing was wrong. And so I would always go to a certain level, then I would go back to, you know, working a legit job or a good business or doing something that was more positive and productive. Well, that path that I was on actually created a spirit in me that really despised drugs, because having that background, I looked at drugs as not the solution but the problem. So I developed a real hatred and anger towards drugs, because I seen firsthand the devastation and destruction that it causes in lives and families as well. And so it gave me a real passion to do what I do. But it also gave me a gift to be able to see through things. You know what I mean? I always hear like, oh, how do you know what I'm going through? You know, like, was you a fly on the wall? No. Been there, done it. Got the T-shirt to prove it. But because God did a new thing in my life, you don't see that spirit on me. You don't see that, you know, potential opportunity to be that type of person. So I use that to the glory of God today to be able to work and impact the lives of those that come through our program. So, yes, like I said, going on 16 years now. So it was birthed out of a passion to be obedient to what I believe that God has called me to do, because I don't have a background in it other than the practical experience, and as well as, you know, a father that was strung out on heroin, a mother that was strung out on, you know, prescription medication, and a father in and out of penitentiary. So, you know, it touches and impacts all of our families and our lives. But I believe that it was preparation for what I do today. And so I'm very passionate and committed to what I do. And I'm thankful for individuals like you and your program that, you know, we've been able to have a collaboration over these years that, you know, I believe has been beneficial and rewarding to the community. So, you know, it's been a journey. This is a calling to me.
Well, you know, that's interesting to say that, because it sounds like you've been able to create something that you get up every day and you're excited. Now, my question for you now, you started off, how did you start? Did you just start off with one house, or kind of how did it start?
Well, I've been an entrepreneur my entire life. And so after I graduated from college and took that route in the pharmaceutical business, and then when I came out of that life, the first place, the only job I really had was at Turning Point. So I went to Turning Point, and I was working there, and I worked there for about a year. And I was at a point where I was trying to really get into real estate, because that was really my thing. I just wanted to get into real estate. So, you know, didn't have a lot of money. Actually, I didn't have no money. So I'm going around to family members and asking everybody for loans and trying to buy property, and couldn't get any loans from the family or the bank. And so one day while I was working at Turning Point, I overheard two gentlemen that I didn't even know talking about buying some property. And so I just introduced myself and said, hey, if y'all talking about buying property, I'm in. And so we formed a corporation called Aftercare Inc. And what the concept was we were just focused on providing sober housing for individuals coming out of treatment. And so it evolved into more of a halfway house, and then evolved into a full-fledged treatment program. But initially, the drive was just to get into real estate. But God had a different plan, and so he was going to use that property to impact and build lives of other individuals other than just rental property.
That's
amazing. Wow, that is pretty amazing. How many facilities, how many properties do you have now? And you have a headquarters now, which I'm really impressed with. The history of your headquarters is that was one of the establishments that African Americans could come to and perform on Nicollet Mall. There was only one establishment, and that was where your headquarters is now. It was also one of the places where people came to, that celebrities came to perform in that building that you own now. So how many properties do you own now?
Brother VJ, I'm up to about 8 now, and the Nicollet location is the outpatient as well as the administrative offices. And I really didn't know the history until you had introduced it to me. And then I found out even more after that. Used to be the old Flame. And back in the day, the story is that the African-American performers couldn't perform in the front stage, that they would have to come through the back and perform at the backstage and had to stay at the YMCA in order to, put them up for accommodations. But here today, now we come in the front door and, you know, we're here impacting lives, not only African-American, but white, black, Asian, Hispanic, Native American. And so God has a way of taking a mess and making a messenger out of it and turning things around. So, yeah, we're very pleased that, you know, where we're at today. And like I said, I got about 8 different locations. You know, not only do we serve men 18 and older, but we also serve women for our outpatient program, and we have a couple of houses for them as well. And so God is just doing a great, wonderful thing here at the Micah House and allowing us to be a place of a point of contact and a conduit in order to, you know, touch and impact the lives of those that come through the doors.
Well, that's pretty amazing. You know, we found out that we have an epidemic coming on. I want you to talk about this. We have young people that are dying like never before from overdoses. And what is your take, and what do you think the solution is?
Man, that's a real touchy, personal. Just buried my brother. I don't think you know this, but just buried my brother just 3 weeks ago. 32 years old. OD from, you know, this epidemic. And in these 16 years that I've been here, you know, just to see the change in the drugs and the impact on the body and the mind. Initially, I would say probably about 5-6 years ago, started seeing a change where majority of our population that we serve were inner city African American. But then all of a sudden a change took place. And I started seeing suburban white kids, 18, 19 years old, starting to come through on methadone. And I'm sitting there like, how do you get to methadone? And you just fresh out of high school. Well, it started with the prescription medication in the medicine cabinet that mom and dad had. And then they graduated from those, you know, oxycodone and, you know, codeine to, you know, heroin because it was cheaper and more readily available. And then you have a full-fledged, full-blown addict on your hands now. and they're only like 20, 21 years of age, and they're going to the methadone clinic. So to see the change, and then all of a sudden the explosion took place, where now it is at the epidemic proportion. And what they're really not realizing is that, Brother VJ, is that these drugs are no longer the drugs of 10, 15 years ago. These are different synthetic drugs that they're, you know, ingesting and putting in their bodies today. And they really don't know the impact. I mean, just to give an example, when vaping first came out, all of a sudden it was, the solution. You know, it was wonderful. It had no, addicting, side effects. Now we're starting to see kids in the ER and kids dying from vaping. So just like the epidemic we're talking about now, with this fentanyl. I mean, they're putting fentanyl in everything, not just the heroin, they're putting it in marijuana, they're putting it in meth. I mean, they're mixing all of these different drugs together. And one of the things that I'm noticing, after these 16 years, Brother VJ, is that the same individuals, because we get some that, it's like a revolving door. And so some of the same individuals that came in, 10, 12 years ago, now coming back. And where they started out with alcohol and maybe marijuana, and then they went through the cocaine and the crack cocaine, era. Now they're back here and they're using meth and fentanyl mixed and heroin mixed. And they're not realizing, the changes that's taking place within themselves. And the commonality, I'm sitting in my position listening to them, and I'm sitting there thinking, like, this is a familiar story that I'm hearing. I mean, I'm hearing them recall, going through this paranoia where people are following them, their phones are tapped, and people are coming in their houses when they're not there, and they're moving stuff, and people are hiding behind trees. And I'm hearing the same common story amongst other individuals that I know don't know one another, but they got the same story. And what's the commonality? It's the drugs. So it's not only taking away their physical stature, but it's also taking away their mental capacities as well. And we're really not realizing that, because now it's becoming more focused rather than on chemical dependency or CD, but now it's dual diagnosis on the MICD, which deals with the mental illness that is now being induced and caused by the chemicals that they ingest in. So something externally is now creating a whole new segment of individuals that are dealing with MI issues because of the drug addiction.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. We're talking to Pastor Lockett from Micah House about drug and alcohol treatment and why it's important for us to, to get involved and understand what's happening to our community. So be really excited to look up his organization, Micah House. It's the headquarters are located on Nicollet, and they've got 8 different homes that they can put you in placement. You're seeing this trend of it's not just our brothers now; it's everybody, and there is a big trend.
They don't discriminate
in the Somali community. Somali community, and I heard there was a 13-year-old girl that overdosed and she died. And so the Somali community, are you seeing a big trend of people coming into your facility from the Somali community?
Yeah, over the past, I'd say, 3 or 4 years, we've seen more and more of the Somalian community reaching out and coming in. And just like in our culture, in their culture, there's a lot of denial. Cultural things that, they really don't want to address it. And so at times they don't feel comfortable with going within their own culture to deal with it. And they really don't,
right.
At that time, about 4 years ago, they really didn't have the resources. But there's more and more of Somalian focused organizations that are beginning to open up, because it is a becoming an increasing, bigger and bigger problem within the Somalian community. And it's really originated from alcohol, because you have a lot more Somalians that are dealing with alcohol. And then now the longer they stay in America, the more Americanized they become, and then start experimenting and trying other drugs.
That's pretty amazing. Do you have any questions for Pastor Lockett?
I do.
Pastor Lockett, is there any difference between drug addiction versus drug abuse, or is that kind of the same thing? Does that go hand in hand?
Well, according to the state definition, and so abuse is more of occasional misuse of a substance, where addiction is more of a addictive behavior, where it's more ongoing, more regularly. But to me, at the end of the day, it's really about the consequences. And so that's what it really boils down to. Somebody that may abuse alcohol or drugs can still maintain a job and still maintain the appearance of a normal lifestyle. But a person that is addicted to alcohol or drugs, their life becomes unmanageable, and you begin to notice that there's loss, you know, relationships, employment, housing, you know, their personal appearance. And so where the craving for that drug or alcohol becomes greater than their existence, and so then it becomes more of a addictive behavior.
Wow. Wow.
Let me ask you this, and I'm gonna get a little bit political. What are some of the challenges as an African American in this industry, leading this industry? What are some of the challenges that you faced in this world of funding and trying to provide for our community? What are some things that you find are challenging as an African-American leader?
Well, Brother VJ, you and I have had, you know, conversations over the years about just being a, you know, entrepreneur and a black business owner. And some of the times it is dealing with our own people. Sometimes it's dealing with your own employees. And but when it comes to the funding, I look at things a little differently, Brother VJ, where, you know, I really stand and lean on the Word of God. And so I redefine my Goliaths in my life. And so even though the reality may be, you know, in terms of, you know, racism and, you know, opportunities being limited because of the color of my skin, I don't use that as a crutch or an excuse. I just deal with it as though that's part of it. And so I just learn how to redefine it and overcome it. And so I've been, you know, blessed and fortunate that my focus and emphasis here at the Micah House has always been about the clients. Because when I first started on this path, really didn't have the background and the training for this industry. You know, yeah, I've been an entrepreneur through and through, hustler and all of that. But in terms of the formal education in this field, I didn't have it. So I had to really seek guidance from God. And so one of the things I asked God, this is before it started 16 years ago, you know, well, what can I do to be different than the other programs? Because I don't want the same results as the other programs have. Because, you know, I see that, you know, the revolving door and all that. So even though that may be part of it, but that's not what I'm not looking just to say, well, long as I just provide you the opportunity. I want some real life-changing experiences to take place so that once they come here, they don't have to come back here no more, other than just share and motivate somebody else, you know, encourage them and share what they did in order to for them to overcome their obstacle. And so one of the things that God, you know, said back to me was, well, don't do what they do. So if you don't want what they got, don't do what they do. And so
my
focus has always been about the clients. And then God also spoke to me, said, well, if you make it about money, you'll always chase money. But if you make it about people, money will chase you. And so my focus has always been about serving people. So that's my spirit. That's my attitude. You know me well, Brother VJ, and I have a servant mentality, because everyone that comes through these doors, I see as a gift. And the same God that saved me is the same God that's available to them. And even though we're a faith-based program, I don't require people to think or believe as I think or believe, because God is God all by himself. I don't need to be no little G. You know, I just need to be me. I need to be the man that I believe that God has called me to be, and then for others to be able to see God through me and say, well, if he can do it for you, he can do it for me. Because I don't see myself as nothing special other than somebody that truly believes and take God at his word.
Well, you know, let me give my condolences out for your brother, but also at the same time, how did you, you know, because when my son go to jail, I feel bad, you know, because I'm going to jail to visit people, not him, right? But how did you deal with that, and how did you wrap around that? And you know, as we do this work, sometimes when our family gets involved in our work, it gets difficult. How did you deal with that?
Now you want to make it personal, brother VJ.
Okay, all
he's
right.
He's stepping on my toes now. it's difficult, man, because, you know, you and I have talked over the years, man. You know, you got to have a real heart for this. And like you said, you know, you're out there on the battlefield and you're doing this because you want to help somebody, and then you turn around and, you know, you see your family's the one that need the help too. You know, and I really enter this in and saying, you know, well, I want to stand in the gap for somebody else so that somebody can stand in the gap for me. You know, because my oldest son and I, we have a very strange relationship. And so when I see, you know, young folks come through his age, I'm looking and I'm sowing into them so that maybe somebody can stand in the gap for me and sow into my son. You know, and then when you have it, you know, hit, you know, because death is permanent. You know, we, yes, you know, as long as we wake up in the morning, you know, there's opportunity to turn things around. But when death comes in, man, that's permanent. You know, so to see my brother laying there and seeing the family and, you know, in the family, you know, looking at it as though they're really not, you know, identifying how he died and turning a blind eye to it and still conducting themselves the same way that they've been conducting themselves. I'm sorry. I mean, it ain't that God made a decision to bring him home. It's a result of his choices that, you know, led to his early demise. And now, now you're going to treat his death as in vain because you ain't learned nothing from a price that he paid. And so when it happened, Brother VJ, I used it as an opportunity. And, you know, after, you know, burying my mother and father and doing their services, you know, it takes a toll on you, regardless of your, you know, your calling or your title as pastor, but still you're a human being and you feel. And so it was difficult. Well, I couldn't do his service, even though they asked me to. But I used it as a learning opportunity. When I got the news, I came to the program and I met with the guys, and I shared with them what had just taken place. And I told them, I want y'all to look at this as a lesson and a price that was paid, so you don't have to pay it. And then grow from there, rather than thinking. You know, because sometimes the mind can trick us, like, oh, you know, if you ever got high and you took a hit in the major heart race and you felt a little funny, you're like, oh, man, I want some of that again. That's that death. You know, it's stupid stuff like that. And then all of a sudden, you know, your heart start beating and then you like trying to scream out for life, you know. But, you know, it's about the choices that we make. So, you know, I deal with it by trying to use it as an example to encourage and motivate somebody else, so that somebody else's family doesn't have to feel that sting of death, and some individual doesn't have to feel that sting for that reason.
Well, you know, I just want to thank you for sharing a little bit of your personal life and your heart with us, because we family. You know, you listen to Blog Talk Radio with Pastor Lockett from Micah House. The number to call in is 347-215-9262. That's 347-215-9262. We are coming to you live on Facebook, too. And a brother, Kenneth Hasley, said, man, this is a great topic. Thank you, Kenneth Hasley. We're live on Facebook at the same time. Pastor Lockett, I just want to kind of touch basis on the condition of the ability to get people into treatment. And is it better, easier now, or is it getting tougher? Or, you know, is it getting harder to get people in? Or is it easier now based on, because it's based on Rule 25s and all that kind of stuff. So is the system making it easier for us to get people in treatment, or is it getting tougher?
You know, that's a very good question, Brother VJ, because, you know, I say that these eggheads over there, you know, at the Capitol, they come up with these brilliant ideas. And I say the individuals come up with these brilliant ideas obviously aren't people to deal with, you know, providing direct care to individuals. Because they try to complicate the process, you know, by calling themselves trying to simplify it, but they complicate things. And anytime they roll out some new brilliant idea, they always got to work out the kinks, and it takes a couple of years. So actually, within the next few months, it's supposed to change that whole intake process where it's supposed to be more easier. So you go to a program like ours, and they'll do what's called a comprehensive assessment. And then that, based upon that assessment, will be able to place you into treatment, which is supposed to streamline the process. Well, they just announced a couple of weeks ago that they're not going to do away with the conventional Rule 25 assessment, but they're going to have the dual system, still the Rule 25 and this comprehensive assessment for another 2 years until they work out the kinks. But to directly answer your question, it's really no more difficult. We do Rule 25 assessments here, and our address is 1523 Nicollet Avenue South. Our phone number is 612-314-2460. So you can come in and you can schedule Rule 25 and under, you know, extreme situation, because I don't ever want to make anything complicated and difficult, because, you know, you call me up and be like, hey, I need to get this person in, and we get them right in. And then we worry about the paperwork after the fact. And so, and there, that goes back to my, you know, foundation of making it about people, okay? So even though the process is that you're supposed to get a Rule 25 completed, submit that to the county, they review it, and then they'll sign off on your recommendation, and then the clock begins there. Well, you know, my thing is that if a person is making the decision to clean themselves up now, then I want to honor that and do something now rather than say, hey, will you come back and check with us next week? Because they may not make it to next week. Okay? But, yeah, they have to do a Rule 25, and we can do them here.
Well, that's absolutely. How many clients can you take at one time?
You mean like my capacity or just in terms of the intake when they come through
your
the door?
Yeah, just your capacity, sir.
My capacity is up to 75.
That's huge, and that's pretty amazing. And you're providing housing, you're also providing treatment and training, and you have a staff of how many?
Staff of 22 people, but that 75 is not including individuals like from the outpatient program that want to come from home, and so we can go beyond that. But that's just in terms of the amount of beds that I have available, 75.
Man, that is great. I have a niece that she wants to get into what you're doing, and I'm going to have her, me, you, and her have lunch and sit down and just talk about how to get some of that. I know I got to buy you lunch because, you know, you ain't going to just let me do it like this. So.
You know I enjoy eating, my brother.
I think I owe you lunch this time
because you got the last one. I got this one.
Okay. Well, listen, that's what I'd like to do. But also, I would like to give some last encouraging words for entrepreneurs that are thinking about doing exactly what you're doing or anything. Can you give some encouraging words to young entrepreneurs in our community?
Absolutely. Brother VJ, I bleed entrepreneurism. So if you cut me, that's what's going to come out. I've been an entrepreneur my entire life. Like I just said, you know, I only worked one real job my adult life, and that was that turning point for 1 year. And I believe in being an entrepreneur because my attitude is that nobody can afford to pay me what I believe that I'm worth. And so I won't settle for less. But that doesn't mean that you don't do nothing until you, start, because nobody starts big, and you have to build up. You know, you have to work and you have to plan and you have to work towards that plan. And so being an entrepreneur means that you're willing to pay the price and the sacrifice in order to achieve out of life what it is that you desire. See, a lot of people say that they want to be an entrepreneur, but then at the first sign of trouble, adversity, they get discouraged and they quit. Well, in the course of my lifetime, you know, my family's been here in the state of Minnesota, because, you know, there ain't too many black families, you know, originate from the state of Minnesota. And so my family's been here over the 70 years. And my grandfather was a true entrepreneur, and that's where I get that spirit from. And so I would go to the Riverview. For those of you that been here long enough know about the Riverview, over to the Riverview, or, you know, down to the Mobile Clark gas station. I would go to different businesses in the city. And I would tell, they would hear my last name. They said, "Well, are you related to Ben Lockett?" I said, "Yeah, that's my grandfather." And they would always say, "Well, we started this business years ago, but Ben got discouraged and he quit." And so I kept hearing that same story over and over again. So it taught me something, because in life we can learn from, you know, what to do and how to do it right, and what to do and not to do it wrong. So I learned from both, good and bad. And so I just learned from that lesson to say, well, I have to have stick-to-itiveness. That means I got to stick to it. I got to see this thing through to the end. Now, every business that I started didn't become successful, but I would go from that business to something else, because as I'm going, not as I'm stopped, but as I'm going, then I would make adjustments. My goal and focus was always on being financially free, and so it didn't matter the vehicle, but it's more of the journey. And so being an entrepreneur, you have to focus on that and don't get discouraged. You got to put blinders on, because trust me, when I went through and graduated from college and my family told me, "You need to go get you one of them good government jobs." And I said, "No, that ain't what I want." And so I would stay focused on being an entrepreneur. But guess what? Them same folks that had them good government jobs were the same people when they retired. The government figured out a way to cheat them out of their retirement, and then some of them came to work for me. And so I believe in being an entrepreneur, but at the same time, you have to be cut from that fabric, and you have to realize that it's going to take some pain and suffering to get what you want, because you're doing something that probably nobody in your family's ever done before. So if somebody's never done something before, how are they qualified to give you advice on how to do something they've never personally done themselves? So remember that. So when people give you their advice, they're giving their opinion. But that's all it is their opinion. And I don't allow other people's opinion to become my reality. I define my reality, not nobody else. So, yeah, that's being an entrepreneur amazing. Is a certain mindset. It's a certain mindset, my brother. You can't be an entrepreneur and have an employee mindset. See, an employee mindset, say, "I'm going to work 9 to 5 and I expect to get paid." As an entrepreneur, you may work from 9 to 9, 9 to 12 and not get paid, but you ain't working for a paycheck. You working for that day that you financially free.
Now you're talking to the choir. Now you're talking to the choir. Come on now. You're preaching to the choir. I love it. You listen to Blog Talk Radio with my friend, my man, entrepreneur from the Micah House. He started from the beginning all the way. He's taking it all the way to the top. I'm excited. Make sure you contact him, Micah House. You can reach him. It's easy to look it up, and he will plug you in if you need treatment or whatever you need. I want to say big ups to everybody in Florida, Iowa, Buffalo, New York, Pittsburgh, Lincoln, Omaha, Nebraska, Texas, and, of course, our main headquarters. You've been listening to Blog Talk Radio.
M-A-D-D-A-D-S. Against destruction, cause you know that we are blessed. Fathers of the ghetto ain't expressing nothing less. From the north to the south, to the east, to the west. Man, that's how you feel. On the streets, we keep it real. Day and night, the struggle fight is serious. I'm so for real. Tell me what was I to do. All I seen was black and blue. Soldiers showing love.